Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The Economist.
From The Economist in London, this is Money Talks, a weekly conversation about themes in the world of finance, business, and economics. I'm Andrew Palmer, the Business Affairs Editor, and joining me for the first edition of 2016 are Ryan Avent, who writes our Free Exchange column, and Soumaya Keynes, our economics correspondent. This week, The Economist publishes its Big Mac Index, a light-hearted guide, first published in 1986, to assess whether currencies are at their correct level. Soumaya, let's start by just explaining to people what the Big Mac Index is and why it is useful.
So the Big Mac Index takes the price of a Big Mac in lots of different countries and then converts them into dollar terms. So the idea is that in the long run, exchange rates should change so that a dollar could buy the same amount of stuff in each country. So in the long run, your price of Big Mac should be the same in dollar terms across all these different countries. But what we see is that some countries have cheaper Big Macs than others, and that is taken as an indicator that their currency is undervalued relative to the dollar.
Okay, right. And we've been doing this for some time, and it's got a life of its own, and we make some fun of it, but people do actually use it out there. Analysts use it in presentations, etc. It has some value beyond just being a sort of a nice piece of journalistic conceit.
Yes, and it does, you know, give us the opportunity to make lots of puns about things being cheap as chips, etc.
Importantly.
For a while, the Argentinian government was asking local McDonald's not to publish the price of their Big Macs so as not to reveal that the official inflation statistics were not quite all they were cracked up to be.
Okay, so nothing really matters more than this index. That's where we've got to. Okay, so what does this year's index tell us? Some highlights in terms of overvalued currencies and undervalued ones.
So the thing that stands out in this version of the Big Mac Index is that most currencies seem very cheap against the dollar. So the Russian ruble, by this measure, is 68% undervalued relative to the dollar. Only, you know, the Swiss and the Swedish and the Norwegian currencies look overvalued relative to the dollar, and they've been overvalued for yonks.
Okay, and obviously dollar strength has been a theme of the past year or so on the expectation of the Fed starting to raise interest rates, as they have started to do. I suppose the obvious question from this, Ryan, is whether the dollar has more room to run in the next year as we expect the Fed to continue to tighten.
Yeah, I think that, the dollar has been up, as you say, over the last year for a few reasons. I mean, one has been the disproportionate strength of the American economy. Another has been the expectation based on that strength that the Fed would start tightening, as it did in December. The big questions going forward will be, you know, can the Fed tighten on the kind of timeline it would like to, which would suggest that we get perhaps as many as 4 interest rate increases this year. That's more than the market expects. If we see that, then I think we'd see the dollar rise some more. The other thing to keep an eye on is kind of general financial volatility. Dollar assets are kind of a safe haven, and so if Fed tightening is throwing a monkey wrench in the works in terms of global financial markets, then we might see the dollar rise more than we'd expect as people rush to buy treasuries and other safe things.
And it has an impact on the profits of S&P 500 firms as well, as we started to see in the last few quarters. So it can weigh on results there. Okay, so very few countries which have overvalued currencies relative to the dollar. Which are they and which stand out, therefore, as potentially heading for a fall?
I think I'd hesitate before saying that the big overvalued currencies are due for a fall. So if you take, for example, the Swiss franc, that looks like it's about 30% overvalued relative to the dollar. But one of the features of this index is that actually you would expect richer countries to have a fairly strong currency relative to poorer countries, and that's because essentially they're non-tradables, so things like labour costs are more expensive in those richer countries. And so actually when you adjust for the fact that some countries are richer and therefore will have more expensive Big Macs, the Swiss currency only looks about 2.5% overvalued relative to the dollar.
Okay, so that gives us a sense of some of the currencies which are overvalued. And obviously there's a great sort of array of currencies which are cheaper on our gauge than perhaps they ought to be. Now, we have seen emerging market currencies in particular sort of get hammered in the last few months as a result of turmoil brought on by China et al. Is there any way of sort of looking at the gauge and saying, you know, which currencies have fallen furthest, which have reached the bottom? Can we use it in that way?
I think essentially as long as oil prices continue to fall, and we've seen some more jitters as markets have opened this year, the currencies of these big commodity exporters probably haven't seen rock bottom.
So we don't know if the currencies have got further to fall, but what can we say about the effect of the devaluation so far? I mean, normally you'd expect some kind of boost to exports. There's some kind of economic gain that results. What's the evidence to date?
So it's quite difficult to tease out the effects of these devaluations on exports. First of all, global demand is weak, and so you would expect exports to be fairly sluggish in that environment. And second of all, you've seen huge falls in the values of these commodities. And so if you take Brazil, for example, the value of their exports has been falling, even though volumes have actually been increasing. The other reason you might think that the export response of emerging markets might be weak is if you think that Dutch disease has essentially hit their economies. So this is when strong commodity prices over the last few years has raised the value of their currency and so made their manufacturing exports extremely uncompetitive on global markets. And now that their currencies have weakened, it takes a little while to rebound because for a long time they haven't had enough capital or labour kind of being devoted to them.
Well, and I think at the same time that emerging markets are not getting the export response that they would hope to get from these depreciations, they're also dealing with kind of the financial consequences of the fall in the value of the currency relative to the dollar. Some of the big firms in these countries have taken out dollar loans that become more expensive to repay. Some of the governments are now struggling to borrow as kind of capital leaves emerging markets and flows toward richer countries. And then the kind of as government borrowing costs increase, that puts another constraint on the economy. So it's kind of a really nasty situation for a lot of the emerging world right now.
And what about the rich world? We should talk about them too, because it appears as though the sort of effect of devaluation is also muted for richer markets, perhaps because of the structure of trade. Perhaps, Sumer, you want to jump in on that?
Yeah, so Japan is the prime example of this. So since 2012, they've seen a huge devaluation of the yen as the Japanese central bank has been doing quantitative easing. But the response of exports hasn't really been one. And the World Bank published a paper that suggested that actually the response of exports to devaluations had been falling. And that was because of the rise in global value chains. So the idea here is that when your currency depreciates, sure, you win from your exports being cheaper and more competitive, but you also lose because your imports, which are your inputs into production, become more expensive, right? And so Japan is a fairly extreme case, which has seen an increase in the type of this trade. And that's been given as the explanation for why their exports haven't responded.
The cheap euro does seem to have given quite a boost to the struggling eurozone economy, though. I mean, the large European economies are running just a massive trade surplus now, vis-a-vis some emerging markets, but also the United States, which is kind of feeling this economic drag from the cheap euro. And it'll be interesting to see if that continues.
And higher exports is one of the primary purposes of quantitative easing, or QE, which the eurozone is undertaking. And we're expecting to see much more of that over the course of the next 12 months.
It's one of the purposes. I mean, what you would hope is that what the ECB is doing also boosts optimism within the eurozone, gets consumers spending and investing and buying houses and all of those things. And so you get increased domestic demand alongside the increased exports. If you get a really lopsided recovery as a result of the depreciation, it's all about exports. That, from a global perspective, is not a very healthy thing.
Policymakers might have been quite worried. If exports are no longer as responsive to devaluations as they were before, then that means that one of the mechanisms of their monetary policy just isn't working as well as it did before. But actually, in October, the IMF published in its World Economic Outlook some analysis showing that actually a 10% real effective depreciation is associated with a rise in your net exports of about 1.5% of your GDP.
China is a country that we haven't mentioned so far. What does the Big Mac Index tell us about the value of the yuan?
So according to the Big Mac Index, the yuan is about 45% undervalued relative to the dollar. So Big Mac is about $2.70 compared to about $4.93 in the US. However, you know, as I said before, with the Swiss, once you adjust for GDP, that undervaluation will probably decrease.
Okay, because the expectation this year is that the yuan is under pressure and is going to depreciate, Ryan.
Absolutely, Andrew. I mean, the reserve hoard that China has amassed over the last decade has been falling a bit as China tries to prop up its currency. And the expectation, I think, is that as it does more to boost its domestic economy, which is slowing a bit, that downward pressure on the yuan will continue. So I suppose you should take your Big Mac with a grain of salt.
Okay, we're almost at the end, but before we go, we should turn you into foreign exchange traders. What would you buy or what would you sell this year? One currency. Sumaira, I'm going to go to you first.
Well, the Fed thinks it's going to tighten rather a lot more than the markets do. And so on the assumption that the markets are right, you should sell dollars.
Bold call. Right, Ryan.
I'm going to say the opposite in that you should buy dollars because I think that the Fed will find that its actions have touched off more global financial instability than it expected, and that while that will lead them hiking rates less than people expect, that the safe haven flows as people kind of rush to safety will actually end up boosting the dollar, ironically.
Okay. Clarity for our listeners there. Thank you. That's all we have time for this week. Thank you to Ryan and to Sumaira for joining me. You can read all about the Big Mac Index in our upcoming print edition and online, as well as all our other finance and business coverage at economist.com. In London, this is The Economist.
The Economist.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pile-ups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.